Hello and welcome to the Occult London podcast. This is a new podcast dedicated to exploring magic, mysticism, the Kabbalah, as well as many other topics of interest. In this episode, we will be discussing the final Sephira in our Kabbalistic Tree of Life introduction series, which is Malkut. If you like the podcast, please make sure to visit our website, which is occultlondon.co.uk, where you can also subscribe to the show, and I hope you enjoy it. So, Malkut, in this episode, we're going to be exploring some of the symbolism and the meaning behind the 10th Sephira on the Tree of Life, which is known as Malkut, or the Kingdom, and is attributed to the Earth and the Elements. As we have with some of the other episodes, I wanted to begin the episode with a short invocation from the Orphic hymns, which I thought was particularly beautiful and relevant to this sphere. It goes like this. O goddess earth of gods and men, the source endued with fertile, all-destroying force, all parent bounding, whose prolific powers produce a store of beauteous fruits and flowers. All various made, the eternal world's strong base immortal, blessed, crowned with every grace, from whose wide womb, as from an endless fruit, fruits many formed, mature and grateful shoot. Deep bosomed, blessed, pleased with grassy plains, sweet to the smell and with prolific rains. All flowery demon, centre of the world, around thy orb the beauteous stars are hurled. With rapid whirl, eternal and divine, whose frame with matchless skill and wisdom shine, come, blessed goddess, listen to my prayer, and make increase of fruits thy constant care. With fertile seasons in thy train, draw near, and with propitious mind thy suppliant hear. And that's from the Orphic hymns. So to start today's episode, we're going to go through the basic correspondences, which are really the Golden Dawn traditional ones. So obviously the title is Malkut, which is the kingdom, which is the Hebrew spelling is Mem, Lamed, Kaf, Vau, Tau. The magical image is a young woman crowned and throned. The Yetziratic text goes as follows. The tenth path is called the resplendent intelligence because it is exalted above every head and sits upon the throne of Bina. It illuminates the splendours of all the lights and causes an influence to emanate from the Prince of Countenances, the Angel of Kether. Some of the titles given to Malkut are, there's lots of different ones actually. So you've got the Daughter of the Mighty Ones, the Gate of the Garden of Eden, Malkar, Calab, the Bride, the Virgin, the Gate of Death, the Gate of the Shadow of Death, the Gate of Tears, the Gate of Justice. So there's lots of different titles there, very much connected with this idea of going inwards and this transformative, so going into the underworld or going into death, etc. The god name of the Sephira is Adonai Malek, or Adonai Harharetz, which is Lord of Earth. The archangel is Sandalphon, but there's also a connection with this sphere with Metatron. And this again mirrors the idea that Keter is the same as Malkut. The choir of angels is the Ashim, or Souls of Fire, which is also sometimes known as the Souls of the Perfected. The mundane chakra is the Cholem Chach Yesodoth, or the sphere of the elements. The spiritual experience is the vision of the holy guardian angel, and the virtue is discrimination. The tarot is the four tens, the four pages, or the princesses. Other symbols that are relevant to this particular sphere are the altar, the equal-armed cross, the temple, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And if we look at the colours as well, which are obviously relevant in considering the four worlds. So in Atzeluth, we've got clear yellow. In Bria, we've got the citrine, olive, russet and black. In Yetzirah, we've got gold and black, so similar to Bria, and then Isaiah is black robe with yellow. Correspondence in the macrocosm is the Gupf, or the physical body, and the correspondence in the body is the feet and, you know, the external sexual organs, but also the mouth. Perfume is Dittany of Crete. So that's the main correspondences. Obviously, as I've said previously, there's a lot of other correspondences you could find and add to this. And, you know, one of the key things that's worth thinking about with the Kabbalah is you should really try and make your own Kabbalah in that sense. So, you know, if a correspondence or a particular herb or a stone feels like it should sit in Malkut, but, you know, the Golden Dawn correspondences say it should sit into another Sephira, then, you know, it's worth kind of investigating that for yourself and doing a bit of meditation and you know, working out where that is. Because it's very much subjective, a lot of this stuff. It's relevant to the person and what that means to you, rather than there being a fixed thing for everything. So... just to talk a bit more about the sphere. So this is where the Kabbalist really begins his journey up the Tree of Life. This is the material world in which we live and, you know, where we perceive things with our five senses. This is the world of the four elements. So it's often symbolized by a circle divided into four sections. And although some traditions, such as the Eastern ones and elements of Gnostic path, tend to put an emphasis on sort of escaping the material, from a Kabbalistic point of view, and certainly from my point of view anyway, you know, Malkut is really the sort of highest manifestation of the divine will in action. So, you know, this is where the actual will of the divine artist has actually been manifested into reality. And I think that's quite relevant in terms of the saying, which is Keter is in Malkut and Malkut is in Keter, but after a different fashion. And that's also expressed as the Shekinah is called the daughter of the Creator, and she's also called the 10th Sephira and royalty, because the crown of the kingdom is on his head. So what this kind of means, from my perspective, is that, you know, obviously everything that we see with our senses is holy, and that rather than the ascension to Keter being a long and arduous journey, it's really very close to us and actually here with us right now in this ever-present moment. So the idea of the presence is particularly relevant if we consider the idea of Shekinah and also the legend of Malkut sitting upon the throne of Bina. So Malkut is the bride, the home of the final hay of the Tetragrammaton, and that means that everything around us is holy. Greer points this out in his book very well when he says the following, and I'll quote this. These traditions that see ordinary reality as evil or unreal often talk a great deal about contact with the higher levels of existence as liberation. In a sense, this is entirely valid, because the experiences of less constricted states of consciousness can free us from attires and assumptions that limit us, the mind-forged manacles of which the poet William Blake wrote, or in the language of the Kabbalistic myth, the coils of the serpent. The real liberation, however, is not found by using these experiences as an expert. It's found by coming back to the everyday world with the new perceptions gained at higher levels, and because of these being able to clearly see the mysteries and power of a real being we too often take for granted. To use the mythical language once again, the magician ascends to heaven so that he or she may return its gifts to earth. So Malkut really is the only Sephira that's not part of a triad. It's rather connected to the tree via the three paths of the universe. So Malkut to Yesod, judgment, which is Malkut to Hod, and the moon, which is Malkut to Yesod. To Netzach, sorry. The fact that it's on its own compared to other spheres, I think, is partly why, you know, one of the reasons why it's got titles such as obviously the Gate of Death, the Gate of the Garden of Eden, Justice. It's very much the idea a gate is a doorway into another world. And so if Malkut acts both as the birth canal of manifestation, but it's also where we go when we die, so that everything that is born must at some time die. And this is something that that Dion Fortune talks quite eloquently about when she says the following: "It will be observed that the conformation of the tree falls naturally into three functional triangles, but the Malkut participates in no such triangle, but stands apart. And it is said by the Kabbalists that it receives the influences or emanations of all the other Sephiroth. But although Malkut is the only Sephira that does not participate in a triangle, it is also the only Sephira that is represented as party-coloured instead of a unit, for it is divided into four quarters, which are assigned to the four elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And although it is not functional in any triangle, it represents the end results of all the activities of the tree. It is the nadir of evolution, the outermost point on the outgoing arc, through which all life must pass before returning whence it came. Malkut is said to be the sphere of earth, but we must not make the mistake of thinking that the Kabbalists meant by Malkut only the terrestrial sphere. They meant also the earth soul, that is to say, the subtle psychic aspect of matter, the underlying phenomenon of the physical plane, which gives rise to all physical phenomena. Likewise with the four elements, these are not earth, air, fire, and water, as known to the physicists, but are the four conditions in which energy can exist. The esoteric distinguishes these from their mundane counterparts by referring to them as the air of the wise, the earth of the wise, as the case may be. That is to say, the element of air or of earth, as it is known to the initiate." So what we can see from here, Malkut is very much important from an initiatory point of view, because it's here that the lightning flash that emanates from the unmanifest finishes its journey into manifestation. And the lightning flash, which is also known as the path of the sword, descent is really a representation of that unconscious force bringing into manifestation. However, traditionally, when it reaches Malkut, it's transformed into a serpent, which then rises back up the tree towards Keter. So the serpent winds his way up the tree through many different levels, shedding his skin. And that's also a symbol of initiation, but you could also say it's a symbol of things like Kundalini energy from the kind of Eastern tradition as well. This path of the serpent represents really sort of different paths opening between the Sephiroth in the sphere of the magician, but it also, you know, has a relevance in terms of the idea of polarity. So you kind of slither from one side of the pillar to the other slowly up the tree. And so the paths themselves also sort of represent that polarity, or that relationship of balancing between the Sephiroth at each curve. The serpent moves very slowly, so it's obviously representing that kind of bringing into balance of things and the union of different aspects of consciousness. But it must also be remembered as well, if you look at some of the old Golden Dawn drawings of this, that the serpent's tail is always in Malkut, and then the forces it brings to itself are sort of transferred down to the earthy level. So that's quite important when we're considering things like you know, magical rituals and practices, because it's all very well to do a ceremony on the astral plane, but it's important to be able to ground those energies and bring that energy actually into manifestation. So the majority of magical operations tend to work on many different levels. And again, Dion Fortune, who I'm a big fan of, says the following about this: Every magical operation must come through to Malkut before it can be reckoned to have attained completion. For only in Malkut is the force finally locked home into form. Therefore, all magical work is better carried out in the form of a ritual performed on the physical plane, even if the operator is working alone, than simply as a form of meditation operating upon the astral plane only. There must be something upon the physical plane, even if it be no more than lines drawn on a talisman or the writing of signs upon the air, which brings the action through to the plane of Malkut. Experience proves that an operation so terminated is a very different matter to an operation which begins and ends on the astral. So it's in Malkut that these spiritual forces from higher up the tree finally come into manifestation. And it's also here that these forces are sort of sacrificed and freed to return to spiritual potency. So this is very relevant when we think about the idea of the gate of death or death or sacrifice is simply freeing process from one type of matter to another. I think this is also relevant with regards to the equal arm cross. So all things in the earthly realm should be considered holy. And also there's obviously this element of sacrifice as well. So things that everything that is in the physical plane contains this spark that's descended down from the highest plane, or the spark of the from the imagination of the great artist, which at some point is then released and turned back into its original form. This is quite relevant, I think, the idea that everything is beautiful and everything is holy in Malkut is also, particularly with regards to William Blake in his Auguries of Innocence, when he says the following: "To see a world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour." And also Dionne Fortune, again, when she says the following: "Malkut is the nadir of evolution, but it should be looked upon not as the ultimate depth of spirituality, but as the marking buoy in a yacht race. Any yacht that puts about onto the homeward course before it has rounded the marking buoy is disqualified. And so it is with the soul. If we try to escape from the discipline of matter before we have mastered the lessons of matter, we are not advancing heavenwards, but suffering from arrested development." Moving on to the gods and goddesses and the mythological aspects relevant to this sphere. So as you can expect, there's lots of different earth gods and goddesses associated with this sephira on the Tree of Life, particularly the earth goddesses such as Isis, Neptis, Ceres, particularly strong with the story of Persephone. And I'll just tell you this story quickly. So Persephone, also known as Kore, she's the daughter of Demeter and Zeus, and she's playing outside one day and she gets abducted by Hades, who's the god of the underworld. Her mother is distraught about this and so abandons her crops and plants and desperately sort of travels around the world looking for her. So upset is she that she finally goes to speak to Zeus, and Zeus forces Hades to return Persephone to the earth. However, before he does this, he tricks Persephone into eating 3 pomegranate seeds. And because she's eaten, obviously, this food of the underworld, she is now obliged to return there for 3 months of the year and then spend the remaining half above the year. And this is a good representation of how Demeter and Persephone, represent different aspects of the earth, or the goddess. They come to represent, fertility and all those sort of earth aspects as well. And that's also why Persephone's often shown holding a sheaf of corn, which is another initiatory symbol. And the idea of Persephone's descent into the underworld, can very much be seen as an initiatory story. The underworld kind of representing this sort of dark, forbidden depths of the unconscious, and the resurrection of Persephone again is a symbol of initiation and rebirth, really, as well as sacrifice. And I found this nice poem from Edna St. Vincent Millay, and it's regarding this story. Be to her, Persephone, all the things I might not be. Take her head upon your knee. She that was so proud and wild, flippant, arrogant, and free. She that had no need of me is a little lonely child. Lost in hell, Persephone, take her head upon your knee. Say to her, my dear, it is not so dreadful here. So, to finish off this episode today, also wanted to talk about the different places of Malkuth, really. So, you know, obviously, as this is the earth and the final destination of the divine work, you know, you can say kind of everywhere that's kind of associated with the earth could be linked with Malkuth. I've personally found graveyards can have a particularly sort of powerful connection with this sort of Malkuth, particularly if we think about the Sephira as being the gate of death. And there's also a lot of a kind of deep, peaceful feeling about graveyards as well, I've always found particularly interesting. Also, I think some of the long barrows as well, so around the Wiltshire countryside, if anyone's been to the UK, there's lots of long barrows. A particularly interesting one that's worth visiting is the West Kennet Long Barrow, which is near Avebury, and it's got a very sort of strong atmosphere in there, and I think it's definitely been used as a place for various different ceremonies and initiatory experiences over the years. So that's it for today. I hope everybody's enjoyed this episode of the Occult London podcast. Please make sure to follow us. The website is www.occultlondon.co.uk, or you can find us on Podbean as well. Please subscribe, and I look forward to speaking to everybody soon. Thank you. Bye bye.